This conference will now be recorded.
Sheridan hasn't made it. He's not going to make it. As far as you know.
I spoke to him earlier today. I didn't mention the meeting. He did say he wasn't going to make it.
Okay. All righty. Well, every year we try to enlist members of the commission in a role that some can play better than others because of their knowledge and relationships with the General Assembly members, et cetera. Sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't so much, but it's also very important for us to know exactly what the authority wants to extract, if you will, or, you know, to help our governance proceed along lines that are efficient and effective. And this is a meeting that typically the staff, and particularly Alex, will present to us the ideas that have surfaced with regards to that very subject and your intentions for the next year. So.
All right. So, yep, just looking forward to the 2022 session. This year, we went through all of the statutes pertaining to aviation. So, and they're kind of scattered throughout the statutes. You have some that are housed within the DOT statutes, and then you have some within navigation and aeronautics, and then some, you know, many of them within the CAA statutes within the navigation and aeronautics statutes. So this year we went through everything just to get a lay of the land and figure out exactly what was there and what needed to be tweaked. And I think some committee members may remember we did this back in 2015, I believe. But now that some time's passed, we want to go back in and just get a better sense of what's exactly there. So you'll notice a lot of these changes that were in the packet are what I would consider to be minor and technical. So I'm not going to go through this section by section, but I just want to call out a couple of the more substantive changes that were being made. The first one relates to the aircraft registration program. So right now, the way that program runs, every year we, being the CAA, get a listing from all of the airports in the state of aircraft that are based at that airport. We then take that information, we have ECALs made up, and then we give that information to the municipalities where those aircraft are housed. And then the municipalities then distribute those to the aircraft owners and then take the aircraft registration fee from them. And then that actually accrues to the benefit of the municipality, not to us. So we really are, for all intents and purposes, a middleman in the process. There really is no role that we play other than collecting the information from the airports and then distributing it off. Hi, Tony. And then, so yeah, we were just talking about one of the proposals for 2022, which relates to the aircraft registration program. And like I said, we really are just a middleman in the process. There's no real need for us to be there if the airports themselves sent the information directly to the town. So we just think it is a lot more expedient if the towns just take control of this program themselves. He would still stay in the role of providing the standardized decals that would be used just so that you don't have, you know, Milford has, a different tag than, Oxford does. So we would keep in it from that perspective, but we think this is still a relatively minor change since the towns are already doing most of this work already. I did reach out to CCM. They didn't initially see any concerns with it. They're still running it up the flagpole there, but we think that's a relatively minor item. Two others that I wanted to just briefly touch upon, Section 10 and Section 17, are both areas where Section 10 is related to the approval of licenses and initial certificates of approval for airports and heliports and other air navigation facilities, as well as license renewals. Requiring more from the operator of the air air navigation facility to provide us with substantiation that the facility is being operated in a way and is situated in a way that will allow for safe operations. So just requiring a little bit more documentation from them for the different criteria that are in statute. Section 17 is similar in that respect, where it's requiring each publicly owned airport in the state to come up with an airport approach plan, which everyone should be doing. I think everyone is doing, but it's requiring that of the airport operator rather than the CAA. Right now in statute, the CAA is supposed to be in the role of developing and approving and renewing an airport approach plan for each airport. So, you know, we're of the opinion these airports, you know, they are really in the best position to determine those types of things themselves. They should be doing that and then submitting that to us for approval. So, again, minor things, but just little tweaks here and there that we think are important nonetheless. Section 18 relates to a number of outdated references that are housed in the sections that pertain to an old terminal renovation project. We initially approached the treasurer's office and just suggested that we repeal the statute, the sections entirely. They do not want to do that because the bonds are still active. Even though that this is an old project, the bonds are still active. They feel that there could be some concern. They took this to their bond counsel. They feel that there's some concern making too many changes, but we are pitching to them at the very least, we should be making changes that have been superseded by CAA statutes when it pertains to the way that we budget and certain restrictions on revenues. Again, feel that these are all outdated references that should just be changed quickly. The other section that's more substantive is Section 20, and this would require a minimum aircraft liability insurance policy for all owners and operators of aircraft that are based or hangared in Connecticut. A lot of folks don't realize there is no requirement right now in Connecticut. There isn't in a number of states, but there are 11 other states that do have some bare minimum aircraft liability insurance requirements. There are federal requirements for larger operators, for air carriers, for air taxis, but nothing for GA, nothing for GA aircraft owners and operators. So we think it's just good policy to have something like that in place if there were to be an accident. And we don't think it's too much to ask for. We have talked to AOPA, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, about it already. I don't believe there's going to be opposition, certainly not to the concept. They did say that they will weigh in to just make sure that the minimum limits that are in the statute are quote unquote reasonable, and we're working that through with them right now. I would take those policy minimums that you see almost as a placeholder at this point, because we're still working that through with AOPA and with some other interested parties, and we're also coordinating with the insurance department on it just to make sure that they don't have any concerns with it as well. So I'll stop there. Well, actually, let me add two other things, one other thing that could become a late add, but we're doing some more due diligence on it, was there's been an interest, and some of you may have seen this at other airports that you've flown through, in getting an airport-wide liquor license at Bradley. So I just flew through Nashville a couple of weeks ago. It's clear they have something like that where you can purchase alcohol in to-go cups and then take it to your gate, drink there, and just take it with you. So we think it would be a good amenity to offer here. Like I said, a number of other airports have it. We're still doing a little bit of due diligence on it because, from a liability standpoint, we want to make sure that we're covered, but also just in the current environment that we are in with unruly passengers, we want to make sure that we're not doing something that could add to that concern. So that was all that I had for the CAA proposals. So I'll stop there if there were any questions about anything that we went through or any of the other sections that I didn't touch upon.
Alex,
Scott? Yep. Thank you, Mike. I do have... Hello?
Go ahead, Scott.
Scott, you're on. You're on.
Thank you. All right. So I just have a question regarding the registration of aircraft. And it's not specific to what you're proposing, but just to understand. So, you know, if we were talking, for example, aircraft that are registered at Bradley, you know, I have no idea how many there may be, but presumably there are some. And you have three communities. Is that right? Or is it four? We don't touch. I apologize for not knowing this. Is it four communities or three?
Four.
Correct. All right. So you have four communities potentially impacted by this. But is, you know, how do you determine that an aircraft is in a specific community?
It's the location of the actual hangar where it is based.
Well, that's what I would have assumed, but I just want to make sure that that is in fact the case. So the majority of this is inuring to the benefit of Windsor Locks, I take it.
But also for the GAs, for all airports across the state, it would benefit the communities surrounding them.
And it does. All right. I've got the answer to my question. I was just concerned about Bradley.
Okay.
Tony, you had a question?
Yeah. Alex, drill down a little more on this alcohol, rambling alcohol license or whatever you're calling it. I'm surprised to think that might be legal, but tell us a little more about it.
Yeah, so there are a number of airports across the country, and actually some even in the region, I believe. I think some of the New York airports may offer the service. But you can basically order alcoholic drinks to go from different establishments at the airport. In a lot of cases, I shouldn't say a lot, but in at least some of the cases, the airport will develop kind of like a standardized cup, if you will, and it will be sealed in a particular way. But then the passengers can pick up that drink, and they can drink it essentially anywhere in the terminal. They don't have to, you know, right now the way that it runs, when an establishment has a liquor license, they have to have that individual, you know, somewhat contained, and they have to be able to, you know, monitor them and things of that nature. This would allow them basically to have that, consume that beverage anywhere at the airport.
So they're not allowed, they wouldn't be allowed, for example, to go on the plane with it?
I believe they would.
Each airline, though, has their own specific policies regarding consumption of alcohol on the aircraft. Right. Today, people will actually bring alcohol on an aircraft, but Southwest, for example, does not allow consumption of it on the plane.
Interesting.
This one is still, I would say, very much in the early stages. We have not even been able to connect yet with the Department of Consumer Protection, and they're the ones that really would need to weigh in on a proposal like this. We imagine they're going to have something to say about it. So there's still a lot more to come on this one if it is to develop into a full blown legislative proposal.
And do you think the airlines? I mean, if they're going to set their own rules, I suppose they have that right. But it seems to me they make a few bucks on selling booze on the planes. So yeah. Well, anyway, it's very early. It's very early in the process, but. I find it very interesting that actually happens, but it's you know, there's so many fights on airplanes these days. It seems to me the booze should be kept off here entirely, but anyway, it's another story. Thanks.
Mike, this is Sebastian. I had a quick question.
Yep. Go ahead, Sebastian.
On the liability insurance, which I think makes very good sense, it surprises me that that those minimums haven't already been in place. What is your sense, and maybe Kevin, you have a sense of this, of, you know, the options that are available to folks if the kind of cost that would be taken on to do this, when I think you mentioned, Alex, and maybe it was you mentioned that other states, you know, don't require this. And, you know, are we going to have folks that, you know, are close to the border of Massachusetts and they say, you know what, I'm just going to fly. It takes me a little longer to get to that airport, but I'm going to fly there because I don't have to establish a minimum and deal with the liability insurance. But I'm really just kind of interested in the potential downside in terms of, you know, people walking away from where they are right now.
I don't really see a downside to it, Sebastian, because I think where it comes down is, so long as the limits are reasonable, most aircraft owners today, or I should say just about every aircraft owner today, already carries a liability insurance. So it's almost a moot issue. One of the reasons why this came up is if you look at the rest of the statute, today, if an accident occurred, we would have to investigate whether or not that operator had insurance. If for some reason they didn't, then it's up to us to actually set a bond amount. And we're trying to make sure that we don't have to get into that process. But as we're talking to folks, and that's why we're not getting pushback from AOPA and some of those groups, is they already have the insurance. And then when you find, you know, with some the commercial operators, the FAA already requires insurance levels of them. So we don't really think it's going to be a big issue.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, when it comes to the affordability side of it, we're just starting to kind of hone in on exactly what we want those policy minimums to be. But in talking to AOPA, they did say that kind of what they view the standard policy for a GA owner is typically $1 million per occurrence and $100,000 per passenger seat. So, you know, we, and even those policies, don't quote me exactly on the number, but I believe it can usually run between $200 to $300 a year. So it's not a crazy amount of money by any, I'm sorry, $200 to $300 per month, but not a crazy amount of money considering the, you know, the aircraft value. We're still working through the exact policy minimums, though, because we want to make sure that even though this is still much lower than what the quote-unquote standard policy means, we want to make sure that we're not doing something that in any way conflicts with the requirements that are already on the books for some of the certificated operators. So that's why we still have a little bit more to do on that. And I would just say, you know, just treat those as kind of placeholders for now, but still very, very affordable, even if it were to go in at these minimums here.
Thanks very much.
Okay. Any further questions on Alex's presentation? I had a question, Alex, back to the alcohol situation. I mean, is there Where does the impetus for that come from? I mean, I can see all kinds of possible downsides from that, and I'm trying to, you know, weigh what
yeah, I mean. The reason why we're taking a look at this, it's really two things. It's the competitive piece. If our competitors are offering that as a service, we want to make sure that we're offering similar type services. But it's also an economic generated potential. For example, you know, Dallas Love Field, they operate alcohol carts right in the concourse, right? So if you walk down the concourse, you want to stop and grab a beer while you're waiting at the gate. And it's also helping them with capacity issues, for example, in the context of their bar and restaurant areas. But it's really those two things that would drive us. You know, first and foremost, we want to make sure that we're offering similar levels of service that our competitors are offering, and we do see it as a potential economic enhancement for the airport in terms of revenue.
Yeah, I can understand, you know, how we want to have convenience for our customers and et cetera. And I suppose it would have some economic ramifications as well. Having been in many airports all over the world for the past, you know, 50 years, I guess I've seen too many situations where it seems like certain times or for certain activities, people who arrive at airports, they're on vacation. It's like all the rules are off. I don't know. I think there's a possibility of danger here. Families wanting to be together and have a peaceful, trip somewhere, or others who are concerned about flying and might be worried a little bit, and I don't know. Maybe I'm.
No, I think you're right to look at those things. As Alex said, we're early in the research, so we want to reach out to some of these airports. Contact Dallas. What type of issues are you running into?
Yeah.
Any with it to understand it a little bit. I'll be honest with you. Dealing with the state folks on issues like this in the past, or alcohol issues here, I suspect we're going to have a very difficult time getting it approved, even if we wanted to go. In that direction, but we have a lot more research we need to do on this before we would put it forward as an actual proposal.
Okay, I guess I'd feel a little more comfortable if the purveyors in the airport itself, are supportive or locally supportive of this. Say, yeah, that's a good thing. We need to do that. I don't know, maybe. Scott, do you have any thoughts on that, or
Mixed feelings. Yeah, Mike, I kind of have mixed thoughts about it. I mean, I know that, for example, there are states like Florida and I think Louisiana and probably others where you can go to a bar or a restaurant and order a drink and take it with you outside of the bar or restaurant. This concept doesn't strike me as being all that novel. The question, I think, which is reasonable, is, could this have an impact on people's behavior in the planes? And I'm just not sure. I mean, if this could generate significant revenue, if we thought that were the case, that would also temper my thinking.
Anyone else have a comment? Tony, you have any thoughts?
Well, I share the comments that you and Scott have just made. I think it's, obviously Kevin and Alex are going to do their due diligence on this and come back to us, and we can revisit it again and again if we need to.
I'll just add, Mike, if you don't mind, I agree with all that's been said. I'm actually a little surprised that our current purveyors, the restaurant owners and bar owners at the airport, haven't been pushing for this over the last year and a half or so. I mean, we have these kind of, you can go get your takeout food and your takeout drink now at all the restaurants. And I imagine that, some of the bars and restaurants that, folks are not obviously comfortable like they were pre-pandemic to go sit and have a beer at the bar, that they haven't been pushing for this. So it'd be interesting to hear their perspectives on it. And it may be, something that you know, they're pushing for elsewhere.
Okay, thank you. Well, where do we go from here, guys?
So, wanted to
talk about the quasi-public agency proposal.
All right.
So those were the CAA CAA proposals that we just discussed. But I also wanted to mention to everybody an initiative that we've been working on for several weeks now with the other quasi-public agencies. As the committee knows, every year we go through the same song and dance where elements of the legislature try to restrict quasi-public agencies by subjecting them to different rules, subjecting them to the authority of other bodies, such as the State Contracting Standards Board, the State Properties Review Board, things of that nature. And, you know, it's not, it really is not something that has a whole lot to do with us at the CAA. Usually these are driven by concerns that certain legislators have about things that have happened at other quasi-public agencies. In fact, a lot of the time when we're talking to some of the legislators who have been proposing these types of bills, they have told us that, no, we see the CAA as a model. We don't think that you guys are doing anything wrong. We're not trying to hang you up. But that being said, every year there are proposals that would do just that, that would lump us in with the other quasis and bring us under the authority of these other groups. So we've been talking to the other quasi-publics about possibly putting together a proposal that could be used as an alternative to some of those, because we try to get across that there are two very separate issues. There's an issue of transparency, which we have no problem with whatsoever, and we're more than willing to try to find creative ways that we can be a little bit more transparent than we already are being, which is significantly. But there's also the issue of control, and that is where we balk at giving up the agency's independence and control over our matters and outsourcing that to another body. So the proposal that we included in the packet tries to do that by addressing some of the issues that legislators have really harped on over the past couple of years, issues such as contracting, so trying to ensure that every quasi-public agency has a procurement method in place, trying to create a kind of a standardization best practices for new quasi-public agencies that are being created in the future, and a couple of other little tweaks here and there that we think would be a good show of good faith that we're trying our best to be as transparent as we possibly can be. Again, you know, all quasi-publics that I'm aware of are already reporting checkbook level data to the comptroller's office, and that's being posted on their website. All of us have a number of different reports that we do on a quarterly or an annual basis. So there's already a lot of information that's out there and available to the public, but we're just trying to find new ways that we can enhance that. One section in here that I actually think would be a very good benefit to quasis is section 6. Right now, the Office of Fiscal Analysis, before any bill is voted on, they develop what's called a fiscal note, where they determine if there are any impacts to the revenues or the expenditures of any state agency or municipalities as a result of the bill. What we're trying to do right now, that does not include quasi-public agencies, we think that should be taken into account when the legislature is voting on bills. They should know how this will impact the bottom lines for quasis across the state. And frankly, I think that would help with some of these bills that we're seeing that could impact us. If there's a fiscal note attached to it and it shows that there would be a deterioration of revenues here, or if there would be additional expenses that would be incurred by quasis. So I think that could be very helpful for the legislature to understand the true impact of some of the bills that they're voting on. But we think that this is all pretty easy common sense stuff that, you know, we're already following here at the CAA. We're still working with some of the quasis to bring them on board and see if we can get them to sign off on something similar and present it to the committee that typically deals with matters like this. But we wanted to just bring it up to the committee as well and see if there were any concerns or questions about anything that was in there.
Alex, I had just one question about the I guess the proposal, the language itself. So in the document we received, the markup is our suggested revisions to what? Is that a proposal that has been kicking around the legislature? That's not current statute, right? I mean, that's a proposal that's been kicked around. That's all of that is current statute?
Yeah, anything that isn't marked new is current statute.
Got it. Thanks.
Yep.
And in red would be deletions that we are recommending, and the blue is, or the underlined blue is.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's you know, Sebastian, you're new to this board, but that's something that we as members of the authority board have bounced around for years, you know, because my personal feeling is that if the appointments to the boards and commissions were made with the due diligence that some folks in the legislature would love to see on every stinking move that the authority takes, we wouldn't have these problems. You know, all too often things just happen because nobody pays attention. But that's a battle that'll far outlive me. But I think really that's the crux. That's the most important thing that could happen, is that the board members of these quasis could be, screened and really want to do a job, as opposed to just, well, hey, here's something you always wanted to do, something here, you're going to be one of these guys, you know? But that's a, that's a really uphill battle, as you can imagine. So, but it's a battle we fight every single year as the folks try to chip away various interests within the legislature, particularly try to chip away the ability of the quasi public to do its job. And there's more anchors that are hung here and more anchors that are hung there, and you're back to square one. But so we've been fighting that forever, and we continue to do so. And I think this is a good attempt to again, demonstrate some grown-up thoughts about the matter, and see what happens. But we'll see what happens.
Sure.
So where do we go from here? What?
I think what you really need is for the committee to kind of vote to refer these proposals to the board, and then we'll go through the same level of conversation at the board meeting in November. And really, right now, the only proposals we're looking to put forward with are the ones that are summarized on these two pages. So you're not approving that alcohol initiative. We just wanted you to be aware that we may start doing some research on it. The only things we're really asking you to approve right now are these proposals that are on the summary sheet.
On the CAA proposal.
CAA proposals, as well as the quasi-public.
Okay.
Well, let me weigh in on the quasi-public controversies that have occurred. Look at, we all know there's been good reason for people to be skeptical based on what has happened with the Port Authority. It's always great to have somebody who's screwing up as bad as they were, because it makes us look so good, and we have every other reason to look good as well. But that's short-lived. The Port Authority is waiting for their final Army Corps of Engineers permit. They have all the other permits are in place, and this issue is no longer going to be a controversial issue. There are pending changes on the board. There'll be new people appointed to it. The Port Authority, that is. And there'll be a clean slate there relatively soon. So I wouldn't become defensive. We have no reason, as we all agree, to be defensive. In fact, as I said, we're a model of how a public-private partnership, quasi-authority, we're a model of what they should be, look like, and behave. So I wouldn't, you know, I just wait this out a little longer before we make too many changes, because I really think it'll sort itself out very soon. And the fact of the matter is, some of these political people, as much of, as I can be on the other side of the issue, I will tell you, this was an embarrassing situation for everybody. But it is close to being resolved. The Port Authority has an excellent executive director. There's been staff turnover there. There's going to be new appointments to the committee, to the authority. And there's just one permit remaining to be had. That's the Army Corps. We thought we were going to get it last Friday, but that didn't happen. And right now, Dave, which has been stirring the pot on a lot of this, I've had a meeting with them about several other matters relating to, but not relating to the Port Authority, but they took on one of our members on another issue, which we're dead wrong on. And they're making changes internally too. They recognize that they haven't really been on top of stuff because of short staff and COVID, and they have all kinds of excuses, none of them which would stand up to in a court. But in any event, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I'd be a little bit cautious before we suggest additional reporting requirements, or unless you have to. Now, if the pressure is really on and you have to make some changes, but everybody tells us the CAA is doing a great job. That's the model we should be working with. And so I don't know. I wouldn't, and I'm not completely familiar with the changes you're suggesting. So, but I'll leave it at that.
Tony, I don't disagree that, you know, I think at some point the port, you know, is going to get those issues behind them. But the reality is, this is probably an issue that's been going on since I have been here. So it predates even the Port Authority issues. There's just a desire on the part of some legislators to try to restrict the quasi-public agencies. And in some respects, what these proposals are about is giving other legislators that want to work with us and understand the need and continue to have that independence to have something to go back to those other legislators with, right? What you see here in the proposals, in a lot of respects, you know, we're giving folks ice in the winter. These are things that we already do. We're just kind of formalizing it now, so that a legislator could say, no, see, they are trying to work with us, so there's no need to pass this more restrictive legislation. So that's what these are really about. It's not really trying to react to the Port Authority issues or any one issue. I mean, as you know, the lottery had issues prior to the Port Authority being created. So this is just something, and I've actually seen this in other states where I've worked as well, where you have quasi-public agencies are constantly under the gun. Some of it, I think, is just jealousy, you know, with the agency's ability to be a lot more nimble than a state agency, right? So I think that's also what we're really trying to do.
Yeah, and it's also union-driven, because they want to make sure they continue to have the level of benefits that state employees have and all of that. I agree with you, Kevin. This Port Authority thing is going to go away relatively soon. But if these are practices that are already in place, and if it can help the political class to understand, you know, better understand what we're about, that's fine. That's fine. One other thought.
Well, I'm all for
Michael, if you don't mind, Michael. I think that one of the things we really should think about, and it's been very difficult over the past 2 years, but I think there's a real need for education among, especially when there's a new crop of legislators who come in. I think maybe at some point we could talk about how we engage the legislators to get them to fully understand the value of a public private partnership like the CAA.
Yeah, so I mean every year we reach out to wide swath of the legislature, frankly more of the legislature than one. But, you know, last year in particular, we put a heavy emphasis on the Transportation Committee. We put out meeting requests to every member of the Transportation Committee. And we did meet with, I would say, the vast majority of the committee over the course of the year. It was more difficult than normal. It was not being able to be in the building and, you know, have those quick conversations with people in the hallway. It was difficult. It was difficult for everybody. But we had a whole lot of Zoom meetings last year. This year, we've already started meeting with legislators. We had about six or seven of them here a couple of weeks ago, and then we have individual meetings that have been scheduled over the past several weeks as well. So we're picking them off bit by bit. It normally does pick up a lot more during session. Now is time when people are off on vacations and trying to think about the legislature as little as they can, or getting involved in municipal elections. So it can be tough to get people pinned down this time of year, but we still have been doing that.
Yeah, I mean, not to belabor the point. Obviously, once the municipals are passed, I think that the next 5 weeks is probably one of the best times to really focus on a meeting with the legislators prior to the session opening.
And we always we've often tried to engage board members in those contacts as well, and we're not wonderfully successful at that because board members have other demands on their time all the time. But I think it would be helpful if, again, we could make that effort to have board members involved because, I think it's good. I think taking the, in a sense, the offensive or taking a initiative to go forward with proposals of our own is a very valuable thing. The risk we run a little bit is of, okay, what are they trying to hide now, kind of a thing. If somebody is really out to get quasi-publics to disappear, that'll be the reaction, But if it's people who, the board members who are not, vested members of the state government in any way, are there also, it adds another layer of independent credibility. I think that's important because legislators also need things to hide behind sometimes, and say, look, I'm hearing from, professional people on one side, whether it be union people or whoever it is who are arguing, we got to control these people, we got to really take them under our wing here. But if you have other folks who are recognized business people, your board members who are saying, hey, no, that's not how you run an enterprise. And it's fine that, what we're proposing here is a way to go. It's important, and here's why. It brings another perspective to the table. So I think it's important that that you take this initiative. I think it's important that we today, even though we may not have an in-depth understanding of each of these things, we don't have a full committee, it's important that we take the step of recommending this to the full board. But I'm just trying to urge you again, try to schedule things so that board members can be involved down the road. So I don't know whether Scott's been around since the beginning. Tony's been with us for a while. Sebastian's new on the scene. But Scott, do you feel that's a valid position that we should take, and are you willing to?
I do.
Make a motion that we proceed with these recommendations?
Yes, and I was just about to offer that, Mike. I would make a motion that we bring these recommendations to the board.
I'll second.
God bless you. There's a second. Is there any further discussion on the matter? Hearing none, all those in favor of moving
Aye.
This on to
Aye.
The board with our recommendation? Aye.
Aye.
But
four eyes and
Kevin or Alex or both of you, one of the things that tourism groups do very successfully is they have Tourism Day at LOB, and they have the various tourism districts come up and meet with their various legislators, and just picking up on what Mike just talked about there, would that help you guys, like if we were to have the board, for example, have CAA Day at LOB, and we'd all be there, you'd have to make sure and tutor us to make sure we're on the same wavelength. But would that be of some help? And you don't have to answer that question now. It might be more confusing than
I think. You may recall, Tony, we actually did schedule one of those. Unfortunately, it had to be canceled.
I think it was March 16th, 2020.
Yeah.
So it was
And we'd have to see, you know, what the procedures are down in the Capitol these sure. days in terms of gatherings. But it is something certainly that's on our radar to do that.
Yeah, right now they're not allowing anything like that down at the Capitol. They don't even have the cafeteria open, I don't believe, yet. And they won't even let people off of the first. You can only enter the LOB or the Capitol on the ground floor right now. You can't even go upstairs. So it's very limited right now. We have actually talked to the other quasi-public agencies also about, you know, possibly doing a quasi-day down the road at some point. So it's certainly something that we're keeping in mind.
Sounds good.
Anything further to come before the committee?
I don't think so.
Any of the members
Make
have
motion.
Anything we want to discuss?
Great, Sebastian. I look forward to meeting you in person someday. Hopefully, it will be sooner than later. So
same here, Tony. Nice you say that. Same here, and that applies to all of you. It'd be nice to actually meet all of you.
We really,
hopefully soon.
Hopefully soon.
We even live in the same town that we haven't met.
Thank you very much, everyone.
No excuse, Mike. Thank you.
Okay. All right, then. Hearing no further. Subjects to be discussed. The motion to adjourn is in order.
So moved.
Tony already made it, and he's gone.
Second.
Okay. In favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
None. Thank
Bye.
You very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks
Bye.
Very much.
Thanks, everybody.